I'm Steve Goldstein with Mark Brody and Phil Latzman, and it's time to talk about the latest Steven Spielberg thriller, The Post.
So, can I ask you a hypothetical question?
Oh, dear, I don't like hypothetical questions.
Well, I don't think you're going to like the real one either.
Do you have the papers?
Not yet.
This is a devastating security breach that was leaked out of the Pentagon.
The most highly classified documents of the war.
The Times says 7,000 pages detailing how the White House has been lying about the Vietnam War for 30 years. The way they lied, those days have to be over.
The new movie, The Post, has been drawing rave reviews for its depiction of how the Washington Post published secret Pentagon documents unveiling covert operations by the U.S. government during the Vietnam War. The movie retells events that occurred 5 decades ago, but it most certainly rings true today in the age of Trump, with journalism and journalists under attack, much in the same way they were by the Nixon administration of the late 60s and early 70s. Len Downey has been a witness to all of this. He spent 44 years at the Post, his latter years there as the paper's former executive editor. He is now a professor at ASU's Cronkite School of Journalism, bringing up the next generation of journalists. We're sitting in his office here in Phoenix. So I assume that you have seen the movie, Len. What do you think of it?
I not only have seen it now 3 times, but I was a consultant on the movie.
That's right.
With a couple other Post people. I was actually in the Post newsroom in 1971 when the Pentagon Papers were being worked on. I was on the city desk, and so I wasn't directly involved, but I knew all those people, and of course I got to know them better over the years. So they had me consult on the script and on the newsroom. The newsroom in the movie is not the newsroom in All the President's Men, which actually we occupied only a few months later. It's still the old newsroom that I first walked into in 1964 with these old gray metal desks and rotary telephones and crummy typewriters and so on. We consulted on that and talked to worked with the extras on what they would be doing as reporters and editors in the background, and talked to the actors about the personalities of the characters they were playing, etc. And then watched on the filming of scenes in the Post newsroom and in Ben Bradley's house where the Pentagon Papers were worked on.
So did you like it? Is it an accurate representation?
Yes, it is. They took some dramatic license that I won't give away now. I think it's been in some of the reviews, but was not substantial. It just was to make it into a more interesting movie. But otherwise, it was very authentic. It was extremely important to the two people who wrote the script, Liz Hanna and Josh Singer, that this be authentic. And it was extremely important to Steven Spielberg, the director, that this be authentic. And he and I talked about that. This was a labor of love for them. It was very important for him to show the importance of journalism holding government accountable in this movie at this particular time.
What do you think your former boss, Ben Bradley, or for that matter, publisher Katharine Graham, would have thought of the movie and their portrayals by Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep?
Well, the portrayal of Kay Graham was uncannily, as often is the case with Meryl Streep, uncannily realistic. She sounded like her, she looked like her, she behaved like her. I think that Kay would have been very pleased. And I know that her children, who've already seen the movie, and grandchildren who've already seen the movie at the showings I went to, loved it and loved the portrayal of her. I think Ben would be perfectly happy with Tom Hanks' portrayal. I know that he loved the Jason Robards portrayal because it was practically mimicry. Hanks wisely didn't decide to do that, but I'm sure that Ben would be pleased with how he was portrayed.
You know, speaking of movies, Spotlight, the movie about the Boston Globe and the Archdiocese of Boston, won a Best Picture a couple of years ago, and All the President's Men, one of the best movies of the 1970s during similar turbulent political times. Movies about journalism seem to be celebrated, but maybe not the profession itself, since the media in general is still unpopular. How do you explain that as a journalist and as a professor?
Well, first of all, the media has never been popular. And I always said to the people that I worked with at the Post, and I've said to my students ever since, don't worry about being popular. That's not our job. Our job is to inform the citizenry and live with whatever anger people have. Because often people are angry not about mistakes that we made. They're angry about the truth that we're publishing because it's something they disagree with. And so we just have to live with that. And, you know, Watergate was very similar to this time, except, of course, without all the social media and all that. But the country was very divided over Nixon and again, very divided over the Watergate reporting of the Washington Post. And the media did not rate very high. I think it's always just above people in Congress and used car salesmen, I think. And I'm okay with that. What I'm not okay with is when the media messes up. And I think it's very important. And as you see that in the movie. You see the dedication to getting this done right in the movie.
Are we entering possibly a golden age of journalism with the profession, again, sort of under attack and the president calling the media enemies of the people? Have you sensed anything from your students about enthusiasm or lack of enthusiasm for the profession?
Our students are extraordinarily enthusiastic about the profession, and we think we are in another golden age that has a lot to do with the technology. While digital technology has disrupted the old economic models of the media and has disrupted newspaper economics and television economics and so on, at the same time, there's this rise of all kinds of new digital news organizations and the transformation of news organizations like the New York Times and the Washington Post into digital news organizations, not just newspapers, where they have millions and millions of subscribers all around the world now that really dwarf the print subscriptions even at the height of their circulation or print circulation. And so there's just all kinds of ways now to not only the kinds of jobs that are available that are different and that are particularly suited to the students coming out now with their multimedia skills, but also opportunities to really make a difference in journalism.
Does the fact that we have so many different sources out there, some of them not very reputable, as opposed to 50 years ago where we had Uncle Walter, a few major newspapers, and you knew where to turn. Here, is it difficult, especially when you're bringing up this new age and new generation of journalists, for people to understand where they're getting the news from and whether it's reputable?
Yes, this is a really important issue that I'm glad that you brought up. It's called media literacy, which is to say there are many organizations, including the Cronkite schools, involved in a very big national media literacy drive that's just starting. Because there's a responsibility on the part of citizens. There's a responsibility on the part of the media to get it right and to provide the information people need. And then there's a responsibility on the part of the citizens to sort through that information for the information that's true and valuable to them. And it's hard. It's not easy. And that's why I think the media literacy movement is great, where they're going to be teaching already in many places, are starting to teach in schools, K-12 schools, in college, and now the general public in various ways to help them understand how to sort through all this to find the truth.
Leonard Downey is a professor at ASU's Cronkite School of Journalism and spent 44 years at the Washington Post as the latter part of the years as the former executive editor there. Professor, sir, nice to talk to you, and thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.